We're holding on Ein Vav Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. So to recap where we hold, we were discussing the opinion of Reb Shimon. Now, Reb Shimon holds, as we've learned before, shchita she'ena ru'uya lo shma shchita, meaning that according to him, a shchita has to be able to result that potentially you would be able to eat the meat of the animal. Otherwise, it's not considered a shchita, which is why, for example, we had an earlier Mishnah that said that if the animal was a treifer or it was chulin that he shechted in the azara, then Reb Shimon wouldn't consider it a shchita for the ganav to be chayiv the shlomi abba v'chamisha. So now we were discussing then. Suppose we have a case in the Mishnah where the ganav stole an animal of hekdesh, and we said that if he shechted it, he's potter from tashlumi abba v'chamisha. So, well, actually, Reb Shimon had drawn a distinction. He said it depends whether it's kodshim shechayev b'achriyoson or not. Is it kodshim that the owner is going to have to bring a different one instead? Then it can be considered his mamon if it's one where the guy is not going to have to bring a different one instead, because to begin with, he only gave it as a nedava. He only said harei zu, this one will be a korban, where the din is then that if it doesn't work out, then he doesn't have to bring another one. So then Reb Shimon would consider that's not his mamon at all, and therefore he's potter for paying the tashlumei abba v'chamisha, because you don't pay that to hekdesh, and it wasn't really his mamon once it was hekdesh.
What's about the which says you have to pay to him, and him is not.
That's why we said that's what we said. You're not paying to hekdesh for gunav mibeis ish for
Wow.
mibeis hekdesh, right? But
What,
right,
what's the
but
issue?
Reb Shimon had said that when you have Reb Shimon had said that when it's kodesh shechayev b'achriyoson, then the original owner has a certain ownership still over it. We mentioned the point yesterday that it still retains its owner's name, in the sense it's still called Reuven's Korban, for example. Yeah. Anyway, so we were discussing then, given that Reb Shimon holds shchita she'ena ru'uya lo shma shchita, how exactly did this ganav shech the animal in such a way that it would be mutter to eat, and without actually returning it to the owner? Because if he brought it as a korban, having in mind the owner, and then the kohenim did the avodah, having in mind the owner, then he was yotzei as korban. So then, in effect, it's been returned to him. So we had three different answers. One was that it was being brought as a korban, but then the blood spilled before there was a chance to before there was a chance to sprinkle on the mizbeach. So therefore, he wasn't yotzei the korban. We had that was Rav Dimi's answer. We had Ravin's answer that he didn't have the owner in mind, so therefore it was a kosher korban, and the kohen can eat it, but the owner was not yotzei. And then we had Rish Lakish's answer that b'chlal the animal was a balmum and he shechted it outside the azar.
Can we bond them? Has to
Well, you
go.
can't be we can't, so you can't be brought it. You can't be brought it. You can't bring in a Baal Mum as a carbon.
And you could find it once you open it up, also.
No, that would be a treifa.
Oh,
Treifa is something else. A treifa is something else.
The
You share, a mum is on the outside. Okay, so then we started discussing.
Then it would be to pay.
So then, so in all those cases, so those would be the cases where it's a shchita ru'uya, and yes, if it was kodshim shechayev b'achriyoson, Reb Shimon would require him to pay the shlomo abba v'chamisha. So now we said Rabbi Loza was wondering then that the fact is, don't you still need, in the case where it was brought as a korban, you need the zrikas adam yet, and in the case where it was a baal mum, you need to be poyde it first before you can shecht it, and neither of those has happened. So how is Reb Shimon considering it a shchita ru'uya? And the Gemara says because Rabbi Loza had forgotten that Reb Shimon actually holds kol oimid lizrik kezoruk dami, when you have blood that was going to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, it's considered to a certain extent as though it was already sprinkled, and therefore we say that a korban in that situation has a shasa kosher. And now we're going to discuss similarly as far as pidyon, as far as redeeming, that also Reb Shimon says when you have an animal that is supposed to have been redeemed, that's ready to be redeemed, then we can consider it to from hekdesh, then we can consider it to a certain extent as though it already was. And therefore, would have the dinim as if it was already. And in our case, then the relevance of that would be that we would consider, even if he shechted it without redeeming it, it can still be considered a shechita ru'uya, and he might be chayav kares for it because he's shechting kodshim outside the Beis Hamikdash. But on the other hand, he's still chayav tashlumei abba v'chamisha. Fine, if, as we said, he has somebody else shechted for him, then the other person is chayav kares and he's not. Maybe he wouldn't be chayav kares anyhow because it's already a baal mum. He might only be over on a lav. Whatever. We're not getting into that detailed discussion there.
So if someone could override the fact that if it's mechusar the blood, then the whole thing is not good.
So Reb Shimon is not saying obviously that without sprinkling the blood, you can eat the meat of the korban. What he's saying is that even in the case that Rav Dimi was talking about, for example, where the blood spilled, or according to Ravin, where it was done shaloi l'shem baylov, nevertheless, we can still call him shchita ru'uya in the sense that, and therefore, he'll have to pay the tashlum abba b'chamisha. The zrika hasn't happened yet, and if the blood spilled, it's never going to happen. Nevertheless, Rav Shimon says at the time of the shchita, it could have happened, and it was expected to happen, and therefore, to that extent, we can consider as though it already happened.
When we learned this Gemara, did we say that but the evidence they could lift some off the ground?
So you do have actually you have a machloikas in the Gemara and in Zvachim, if it's spilled on the floor directly out of the neck, can actually no. So I think the Gemara says there if it's spilled directly out of the neck onto the floor, everybody agrees you can't collect it from there. If it's caught in a mizrak and then it's spilled, I think you are allowed to collect it off the floor and sprinkle. And I think maybe you do have a mandama there who says that even if it came directly out of the neck, you're allowed to collect it off the floor. I'm not sure about that though, but whatever. Anyway, okay. So in any case, we've established that according to Reb Shimon, zrika kola ovid lizrik kazaruk dami, when you have blood that is supposed to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, and there was time yet in the day to do that, we do consider it to a certain extent as though it was already done. Now we're going to show the same thing is true as far as pidyon, as far as redeeming an animal from hekdesh. We're the same, and therefore the same thing, that it'll work then with Rish Lakish's answer, that he shechted the animal as a balmum outside the azara, and therefore it's considered a shchita ru'uya, even if he wasn't poideh yet, and therefore in practice we might have to bury it like any kodshim that was shechted inappropriately, but nevertheless in principle we would consider as though it was already redeemed, because that's the only thing, that's the normal thing, that's the normal next step you do with an animal balmum like that, and therefore yeah. So, where do we see that Reb Shimon holds that when something is going to be redeemed, it's considered as if it was already redeemed? The Tanya, Reb Shimon Omer, and here we have the shortest Omud of Gemara in all of Shas, because Tosfos takes a tremendous amount of space discussing it. Para mitama tumas oichlin. The para aduma is able to have the tuma of tumas oichlin, the tuma of food. Now you would argue, what do you mean? You're not eating the para aduma after you shechti, you're supposed to be burning it. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon says that it can become tame as if it was food, meaning that if a sheretz, for example, were to touch it, it would become tame. Because it had a shasa kosher, there was a period of time where it could have been eaten. In principle, once you shechted it, you didn't end like this. Obviously, you're not going to eat it. You shechted it in order to go and burn it as a part of aduma, and it's worth a lot of money, etc. But in principle, it was a kosher shchita after all. There's nothing preventing you from now taking some of the meat and eating it, except the fact that then you won't have a part of aduma, of course, because you have to burn it. You have to burn it complete. But in principle, you could have eaten it. So therefore, he says it's considered, it has a shasa kosher. So let's learn the next three lines on Amud Beis, and then we'll go back and discuss what Tosfos has to say on this whole point. So v'omer Rish Lakish. Further, Rish Lakish says, what does he mean by that? Oimer Hoy Reb Shimon. That, what do we mean? What shasa kosher do we have on the face of it? I mean, it belongs to Hekdesh. You can't on the face of it. How can you buy it back from Hekdesh at that point? No, Oimer Hoy Reb Shimon. Pora Niftas Agabe Ma'arachta. Reb Shimon would say, even once the Pora Aduma has already been placed on the ma'arocha, on the pile of wood over there, and even you shechted it over there, if now you found a nicer animal for par aduma, the same way as korbanos, you have a mitzvah to bring the nicest one. This was not a korban, but it's still to some extent it's considered like one. So therefore, so if Beis Din found the nicer one at that point, even though they already shechted it, they would have a mitzvah to be poided, the meat of this one, and then people will take it and eat it, and they'll use another one instead for the par aduma. So therefore you see that when Reb Shimon says that hoysel or shasa kosher, that's what you mean. Even after it's shechted, not only in principle a person could grab a piece of meat from it and eat it, but conceivably you could even have a case before they ended up burning it where they find the nicer one and then they put to this one and they take it off the ma'aroch, or they take it off the wood pile over there that's prepared in order to burn it, and they place a different one on there and shecht it and start the whole process all over again. No, so it's not shchut echutz because it's not a korban. Oh. It's not a korban. It's supposed to be shechted outside the Beis Hamikdash. But what we're saying is, in other words, that if they shechted it having in mind that it was going to be the Parah Aduma, and they're getting ready to do the next step, which is sprinkling the blood and then burning it, then what would happen if they, Reb Shimon holds, if at that point they find the nicer one, a nicer animal for Parah Aduma, then what they should do is be poda this one, and then take it off, go distribute the meat to people who can buy it, and then and whatever, and take the new one and start all over.
You wouldn't be able to use both of them.
You can't use both of them because you have a din that you can't do two part adumas at once, because each one, the ashes have to be separate. If they ended up burning the first one, yes, conceivably right after that they could go and take a second one right away and go and shecht it and do it. In practice, they wouldn't have any particular. In practice, they wouldn't necessarily have a reason to do that. What you do have is in the Mishnah in Parah, when you have the it discusses over there how many Parah Adumas were made in history, it does mention a couple of Kohenim Gdolim who made two Parah Adumas. So is it that one of the the Gemara explains elsewhere that it means that one of them became posel for one reason or another, and therefore they made a second one. Maybe one of them was posel only to Rabbanan, and therefore they made a second one, so we can still credit him with doing two Parah Adumas, in the sense he did do one that would have been kosher d'oraisa, just a chamin posel it for one reason or another, and therefore, yeah. But Shimon HaTzadik, I think, was one of them, and Yochanan Kohen Gadol, I think, was the other. Yeah. Oh, no, Rabbi Shmuel ben Pavi, I think, was the other one. Whatever, yeah.
One for a long time, so he was able to do two.
Yeah, so he was able to do. So it could just be that he did two in the sense that it ran out, but Lav Davka, it wouldn't run out that fast. So more likely, I think the Gemara elsewhere explains that one of them became possible. Okay, so now to talk at some length about this business of Hoshel or Shasa Kosher. Tosfos points out a couple of things. First of all, Tosfos asks that why anyway do we need that why in order to be poedic, why do we need it to have now Reb Shimon would hold that Reb Shimon would hold that even after it's shechted, you could still be poedic, never mind Shasa Kosher. Reb Shimon holds that only when it comes to Karbonus do we have a concept the animal has to be standing there in order to be poedic. Yeah, the Torah tells us in Parashas Bechukos when it talks about the concept of buying back Kodshim from Hekdesh, if they develop a mum or whatever, it uses the expression behemid, that the Kohen has to stand the animal up, implying you can't do it after it's shechted. But by Kodshim Bet Kabayis, Reb Shimon himself disagrees with all of that anyway and says that you could do it even after they're shechted. So who cares whether it had a Shasa Kosher or not? That's the part Adruma is not Kodshim, it's not a Korban after all, it's being shechted outside the Bais HaMikdash, it's Kodshim Bet Kabayis. So therefore, so it doesn't matter whether it had a Shasa Kosher or not. And Tosfos says what it means is here, even after the blood was sprinkled, so you have, again, the process of doing the Parah Aduma is they shecht it, the Kohen who's supervising it takes the blood and sprinkles it seven times in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash, in the direction of the Kodesh HaKodashim, and then they burn the Parah Aduma together with the Eitz Erez and Ezov and so forth. So now, either Chiddush is, Tosfos is saying, that Reb Shimon is saying, even after the Hazar, normally, you might not be able to be poedet. Nevertheless, since you could be poedet, as Rav Shlokish goes on to say, if you found the nicer one, therefore, at this point, it is metame tumas oichlin. It becomes tame as though it was food. So now, if a sheretz, for example, were to touch it, or tame food were to touch it, then it would become tame. That's the next Tosfos actually deals with in more detail about that. But first Tosfos, the first Tosfos over here deals with also the question, we find in different places in Shas a concept called Chibas HaKodesh. We find that even when you have something which is not Mekabel Tumah under normal circumstances, but because it belongs to Kodesh, for example, the wood that's burned on the Mizbeach, the Lavoina that's brought with Korbanus or whatever, is able to become Tomei as though it was food because of Chibas HaKodesh.
It means love, right?
It means the love, right? So the love of Kodesh, the fact that it's precious to us, means that it's considered food even though it's not really food. So then why don't we say the same thing over here? Again, why do we need to specifically have a Shasa Kosher? And so Tosfos discusses that would make you can do that. Chibas HaKodesh can make that something which is not food can be considered food, but it can't make that something which is the meat of the Parah Aduma itself is food. And it's just a matter of it's not meant to be eaten. It wouldn't be, it's even Chibas HaKodesh wouldn't make it food were it not for the consideration that it has a Shasa Kosher. So that's what Reb Shimon means. The second Tosfos, which is in greater length, deals with the question. Now we know the paradrama is one of those things where it's matame anybody who is involved with it, anybody who's involved with burning it and collecting the ashes afterwards and so on and so forth, it becomes tame anyway. So why do we need it? So why do we need kosher? It's something which is going to be matame, or what's called tuma chamura, stronger tuma. So already now it should be able to be matame shasa kosher or not. And so Tosfos deals at great length with various ins and outs of that, first of all, are we talking about over here that maybe you have Rashi brings from Rashi elsewhere that you have, for example, it means that even less than a kazayas of it, if you were to join together less than a kazayas of it, a kabetza is the minimum to be matame other food. If you were to join less than a kabetza of it with dough, you were to take, for example, and make like a make like a crepe out of the meat of it inside dough, and the total was a kabetza, then we could say it could be matame, even though by itself it wouldn't be enough to be matame. And Tosfos discusses in the ins and outs of that, and is that indeed necessarily so? And Tosfos also brings in the soul Azazel, where also it's matame, the person who's bringing it to Azazel, and you have similar considerations with that. One thing is Tosfos ends up pointing out that look, the soul Azazel is not meant to be shechted here. The Parah Aduma is meant to be shechted. That does make a difference. But anyway, Tosfos discusses a lot of different angles on the whole matter. One thing is, Tosfos says that maybe actually the word in our Gemara is not parem mitame tumas oichlin, which means that it's mitame other things, but rather mitame, that it's able to become tame as mitame tumas oichlin would mean, in other words, that if the para that for example, if it became tame. Just the very fact that it's matame, people who touch it. So therefore, if it touches food, it will also become tame. But then Tosfos is saying, maybe not necessarily. You're saying that it's matame people who are involved in it. But after all, just touching the Parah Aduma, if you're not involved in burning the Parah Aduma, and you're stamped passing by, and you're curious, and you touch the Parah Aduma, you won't become tame, because you're not one of the people involved in it. So we see the Parah Aduma is not something that's intrinsically matame, like a nevela of an animal, or like a dead body of a person, or a sheretz, or what have you. It depends on... Even if it's shechted already, yeah. So, because you're not involved with it, you're not dealing with any part of the Parah Aduma. So therefore, by the same token, not necessarily are we going to say that it's matame other food just because the food touches it. Rather, the Girsa and the Gemara over here might be part of mitame tumas oichlin, would mean that it's able to become tame as food, meaning if a sheretz or tme mes or whatever touches it. And then Tosfos also mentions a possibility that it means that when we say porem tame tumas oichlin, what we mean is poshet, that if a sheretz or what have you were to touch it after it's shechted, then it would passel it from being a Parah Aduma, even though you already shechted it, you're already getting ready to do the rest of the process. But now at this point, a source of tumah came and touched the meat of it, because we say it has a shasa kosher, and therefore it's able to become tame as tumas oichlin. The result would become that it's posel altogether, as even being brought as the Parah Aduma. You'd have to stop the process there, take it off, and go find another Parah Aduma. Anyway, so that's in Bekitzer, those are some of the issues that Tosfos deals with over here. These aren't even the longest Tosfos in Shas, by the way. There are much longer ones, but those often spread out over two Amudim, whereas here it's all on one Amud. But yeah, the result is we have a very little piece of Gemara over here. Anyway, the point is, so we see that Reb Shimon is saying, even though you weren't poyder yet, you didn't necessarily find a nicer animal yet to be poyder to replace this one yet. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon is saying it's mitame or mitame, according to the different girsos, tumas oichlin. So because it had a shasa kosher, in other words, because you could have been poyder. So we see, in other words, again, that since you have something which is ready to be nifta, it's ready to be redeemed, then to that extent we can consider it as though it was already redeemed. So therefore, answering back then, when Rish Lakish had said on Ayin Vav Amud Beis that the case when according to Reb Shimon, in the case of some Kodshim, the Ganav is going to have to pay Tashlumei Arba V'Chamisha, And we said, how is that? If either he shechted it as a korban and then the owner was yotze, or it was a shchita shein ruya, the answer is it was a balmum. He wasn't poide yet, so therefore he was over on, he was over at least a lav, maybe even more, of shechting kodshim that were not yet redeemed outside the Beis Hamikdash. Nevertheless, it's a shchita ruya because all that was missing was to be redeemed. And Rav Shimon says, kol ha'omid liftes kepadri dam. And Tosfos over here on Amud Beis over here, the first Tosfos over here, Omer discusses, well, among other things, the point that when Rish Lakish is saying you could, that Rav Shimon is saying you could be poided at that point, means even midrabbanan. We're not going to say that the Chachamim are preventing him from being poided at that point. We're still going to say that we're still going to say you're able to. Okay. Anyway. So, yes, we can infer all of the answers that we said before, that we learned yesterday, that they will work out as ways in which Rav Shimon is going to be mechayev the ganav to pay tashlama abav chamisha for shechting an animal that's a korban. Because again, either we're talking about that the blood spilled, but at the time of the shechita we didn't know yet that was going to happen, and therefore we can consider the kol ha'omer lizrak kezoruk domi, and at that point we can be mechayev in tashlama abav chamisha. Or we say if the korban was brought shaloi l'shem bailav, then definitely it's a shechita ru'uya because there's no question about that, because after all the korban is kosher unless it's a chatas or a korban pesach, where in such a case it would be bustle. A chatas or a korban pesach, if they brought shaloi l'shma or not having the owner in mind, then the korban is completely pasul and they have to take it away and burn it and nobody can eat it.
He wouldn't be considered balabas.
So then that would be an example of a shchita shein ruya. Reb Shimon would patur him from tashlum abav chamisha because that's a shchita shein ruya. But if it was a shlomim or an oilo or any other kind of korban and it was shechted shaloi l'shma or not having the owner in mind, it is a kosher korban. The korbanim continue with the avoda of it, and eventually they eat the meat, and eventually whoever brought the korban eats. If it's the type of korban that the owners eat from, then they eat from it. Just they're not yotze and they have to bring another korban. Well, we'll learn about all those details in Masechet Zvachim in a year and a half or so. Bez Hashem, we'll get to it. But anyway. So according to that answer, sure, it's a shchita shein ruya. And according to Rish Lakish, again, he's talking about that it was a balmum shechted outside the azara. You weren't poide yet, but since we see that Rav Shimon holds kola imid lifters kepadri damu, so therefore that answer works out. Okay. So now getting back to that point, we have to ask why are the bottom line is Rabbi Yochanan is understanding the scenario as being that the animal was brought as an actual korban. And then we have to discuss why it is that it's not considered that he returned it to the original owner by bringing it as a korban. Whereas according to the Shlokish, he's not bringing it as a korban, he's shechting it as a balmum outside the Azara. So we have to figure out why do they have to give different answers? Why isn't each one satisfied with the other one's answer? So the Gemara says, Bishlema. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema Rabbi Yochanan le'omak Rabbi Shimon Lakish." I understand easily enough why Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rish Lakish, and says we don't want to talk about that. Rabbi Shimon is talking about specifically a case of Lamum. The Kaboy le'ukmi b'masnisin after the Betzmimin. He wants to say that the Mishnah is talking about even when the animal was a tamim. He holds that to say that it refers only to a balmum is a tirutz dochuk. It would be a dochuk to say that Rav Shimon is talking about only when it was when the animal was a balmum, and to say that if the animal was a tamim, that this din would not apply at all. Not so much a chiddush, but it's a dochuk. But why doesn't Rish Lakish accept Rav Yochanan's answer? Why does he have to force it to say that it's talking about Balei Mumin? Why doesn't he use one of the two answers that we brought from Rav Yochanan, that the blood spilled or that it was brought Shaloi L'Shem Bailav? And the answer is Amalach, because Rish Lakish is going to answer you. The Pasuk says, Utvachoi Umachoroi, or Umachoroi, actually, the Pasuk says. The Pasuk describes that the Ganav steals the animal and he shechts it or he sells it. Now, we have a hekesh, therefore, between the tvicha and the mechira, which we learned different dinim from it earlier in the parak. The point is, Rish Lakish says, kol hecha, de isse b'mechira, isse b'tvicha. Only when it's possible to do mechira, only then do we also say that he's chayev tashlom abav chamisha for the tvicha, for the shechting. V'chol hecha, de lesse b'mechira. If it's something where mechira is not relevant, as we're going to give now as far as kodshim. Let's say b'tvicha, then Rish Lakish says tvicha will not apply either. Even if he is teveach, even if he shechts the animal, he will still be potter. Now, Tosfos points out, for example, we learned earlier in the parak, if a person sells the animal on Shabbos, he's going to be chayiv tashlum avav chamisha. But if he shechts it on Shabbos, he won't, because kam lebedirav aminei. The difference is, Tosfos says, fine, the shechting on Shabbos makes him potter because kam lebedirav aminei. But if he had shechted the same exact animal on Friday or on Sunday or any other day of the week, then there'd be no problem. Of course, he's chayiv tashlum avav chamisha. Therefore, we can say shechita does apply to this kind of animal. It just doesn't apply today. As opposed to, as Rish Lakish is going to point out of here, when it comes to kodshim, you can't sell them. When you have an animal that's ready to be brought as a korban, and that's a tomim, you can't sell it. So therefore, there's no mechira possible, and therefore, Rish Lakish is going to say, tzricha also is not going to be mechayiv in tashlama abav chamisha. Therefore, Rish Lakish is forced to say that it can only be talking about a balmum, which can't be brought as a korban.
That's why
he had to say that we're talking about a balmum that was shechted outside the azara. And the only thing is, he hadn't yet redeemed it from Hekdesh, and therefore say that that's the case where Reb Shimon would be mechayev him again when it was kodshim shechayev bachrius, and when it was kodshim that the original owner is now going to have to bring a different one instead. So Rish Lakish says, kol hecha de isib mechira isib b'tvicha. Whenever mechira is relevant, then tvicha is relevant. Wherever the whole concept of selling it does not apply, then neither does the concept of shechting it. He's not chayev for the tvicha. Now, when it comes to kodshim, if you sell an animal of kodshim, it's not a valid sale, because as long as it's a tomim, you can't be poydet. You can only be poydet once it's a balmum. So therefore, Rish Lakish said, less no after tvicha. Therefore, tvicha is not going to apply either. So if the animal was still a tumim and he would have shechted as a korban, then we would say that he's potter because it has to be where mechira is possible. Only when the animal is a balmum is mechira possible, not when it's still a tumim. So by the way. By the way, Maseres Hashas over here refers to a Tosfos and Ksubas that asks, what about, here's another example, where you have Mechira on the face of it is not possible, and yet we said he's Chayev for the Tvicha, and how would that fit with Rish Lakish? Namely, we had the case, Udiyor and Arperek, of Shur HaNiskol. We had an animal that killed somebody, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and now it has to be given skila. We said that if he were to shech that animal, then he would be chayef tashlama abav chamisha. There's no kom lebedir abimineh or no anything. Fine, according to Reb Shimon, he would be potter, maybe because it's a shchita shein ruya, but according to the Chachamim, he'd be chayef. Now, if according to Rish Lakish, if we're saying that it has to be only when mechira is possible, if tvicha is possible, where you can't sell a shara niskol, it's also bahana. And Tosfos over there answers because conceivably he could sell it to a goy, a yid. He can't sell it to because it's going to be also bana to a yid. But conceivably, if he were to sell it to a goy, then the money that he gets for it is not going to be also. We have a concept in halacha. There are most kinds of isurei hana. You're not allowed to have hana from them. But b'dieved, a person went and sold most isurei hana. The money is mutter. There were only a few rare cases that not. Avad zara being one of them. Fruit of Shmita is another one. So you have certain rare examples, but other than that, generally when a person sells Isurei Hana, the money remains mutter afterwards.
And give the dog in Aram.
If you give it to a dog, that would be having Hana, but if he were to sell it to a goy, he's over on the Isur of having Hana from it, but nevertheless, the money still remains mutter.
Because his own dog is chayev, right?
It's not chayev. I mean, he's being over on a lab of a lawyer. Ochos, sorry, would he be getting malchus because he's having hana from it? Would he get malchus for that? I'm not sure. But anyway, Tosfos also brings there another point which we've touched on earlier in the Masechta. Rabbi Natam holds bechlal that the shor haniskol doesn't become also mechayim. It's not also when it's alive. For example, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, Rish Lakish would say you could still plow with the animal and you're still okay with that. Only once it's shechted or killed in whatever way, then the meat is also bana. Well, then we have a very simple answer. You could sell it while it's alive, and it's not also at all. Not right, because that's how Rabbi Natan learns that it's not also, even though Nagreni Nigmar Dino, even though the Din Torah was already paskin and the animal is chayiv skila, but Rabbi Natan learns that until it's actually given skila, then it's still mutter bahana.
Well, you sell it, it changes status also, you know, right?
Well, that's as far as the Ghan of acquiring it. Oh, you're talking, once it was Gmar Din, it doesn't change. It still stays moored. Yeah, I mean, it's because now it's not just a matter of it's moored, it's a matter that Basin condemned it to death. So selling it to somebody else. If you sold it before, then maybe we could talk about that now that takes off the hadav, and therefore, yeah.
We learned that because we worry about this happening, that's why we can't do it.
We don't want the person to do it, but and Beis Din might take steps on an individual basis if they see that the guy is prone to doing that. But in principle, again, this is only according to Rabbeinu Tam. Other Rishonim disagree with him and say it is also Mechayim. We won't allow him to sell it, but nevertheless, the Yevit, if he did sell it, and practice, the only possible customer would be a Goy, because a Yid would find out this is a Shoran Niskol, and he would say, I want my money back. So therefore, so... where's the goy? The goy is going to be able to keep it, and then whatever. Then yeah, okay. Anyway, so that's why Rish Lakish is forced to say that the case where Rav Shimon is going to be machayev him for tvicha is going to be where the animal is no longer able to be brought as a korban, because if it's still able to be brought as a korban, you can't sell it, so there's no machoray, and therefore he would hold there's no tvicha.
That's why he has to go with.
That's why he has to go with the case of a baal mul. And the Gemara points out, Ba'azul Tanai, which therefore it comes out that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are both going in that machlokas l'shitasim. They're both going according to what they say elsewhere. Where are we? According to Rav Shimon, where again, Rav Shimon says that if the animal was treifa and you shechted it, then you're going to be potter from tashlum al ba'al v'chamisha, because not a shechita re'uya. What about if you sold that animal instead? Now, there's nothing wrong with selling an animal that's treifa, but the question is, again, are we going to say that it has to be only when shechita, only when mechira is applicable, shechita applicable, and vice versa, or not? So if he sells, so according to Rav Shimon, if he sells treifa, Rabbi Yochanan am chayev, Rav Shlokesh am potter. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to say he's chayev for the sale. Rish Lakish will say he's potter. Rabbi Yochanan Amachayev, afagab de lesse b'tvicha. It is true, according to Rabbi Shimon, tvicha is not applicable to this animal because it's a treifa and it's a shchita she'en ru'uya, because you're not going to end up being able to eat the meat of the animal on the grounds of being a treifa. Nevertheless, he said b'mechira, you could still sell it. There's nothing wrong with selling a treifa animal. So therefore, say be chayev for that mechira. Whereas Rish Lakish would hold that once tvicha is impossible, and not that you can't shecht it, but again, according to Rav Shimon, that wouldn't be considered a shchita, because it's shchita shein ruya, and Rav Shimon would patter him from tashlum abav chamisha. If it's a shchita, then therefore the utvacha imacharei teaches us that he's also potter if he sells such a animal. Okay, so the Gemara says Eisvei Rav Yochanan l'Rav Shimon ben Lakish. A braisa says, gun of kilayim, if a person steals an animal of kilayim, so you have, for example, a sheep and a goat were crossbred, a sheep and a goat were crossbred, and So you have an animal of kilayim. You have a sheep and a goat were crossbred, and now you have an animal which they have it, by the way, nowadays also occasionally farmers will do it. They have a name. They even have a name for it in English, depending which parent was the goat, and depending whether the father was the goat and the mother the sheep, the other way around. They call it in English a geep or a shoat. But so you actually have such things anyway. I mean, they're different species, but sometimes you have different species that are closely enough related can interbreed and produce children. Same way as horses and donkeys can produce mules, the same way a goat and a sheep can produce a geep.
Yeah.
So it has some synonym of one, some of the other. It won't be fertile as usual. Hybrids are not, but nevertheless, it still exists. Anyway, so a braisa says, gun of kilayim v'tavcha, the tavcha, if a person steals an animal of kilayim and shechts it, or treifa umachra, or he steals a treifa animal and he sells it, mishal tashlama baba chamisha. So my lav Rav Shimon, shouldn't we assume that this braisa is even according to Rav Shimon? Because after all, the braisa is not giving a name on it. So therefore, and the point is, or not just because it doesn't have a name, but the point is, now as far as the kilayim, the chiddush is Rashi explains, because the Gemara is going to explain soon that usually now like this. What does the Torah say? A person steals shor oiseh. Usually, as the Gemara is going to point out in the next piece over here, usually the word seh means specifically an animal that's 100% sheep, and there's no mixture of any other species in there. Here, as we're going to go through and we're going to work out in the Gemara, here the person is chayev even for kalayim. So that's the chiddush of that. As far as the treifa, the point is, According to the Chachamim, there'd be no reason to mention a Terefa. There's no Chiddush. Even if you shech the Terefa, you also chayef the Shlomo Abba B'chamisha, because they don't hold of the whole concept of Shchita Shein Ruya. They say as long as it was a Shchita that followed the Halachas in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Shchita, we don't care whether in the end the animal is able to be eaten or not. According to Reb Shimon, who makes the distinction, the Braisa that mentions selling a Terefa, on the face of it, has to be according to Reb Shimon, because according to the Chachamim, what's the Chiddush in it? So the Braisa is saying, Alma afagab delase betvicha isim mechira. So you see that even though tvicha is not applicable because the animal is a trefa and you're not going to be able to eat it after the shchita, nevertheless mechira applies. So then that contradicts you, Rish Lakish. Amalei, so Rish Lakish answers loy rabbanon. No, the Braisa would be according to the chacham. So you're going to ask rabbanon. So what are you? Why would the Braisa mention only selling it? According to the Chachamim, he's chayav for shechting it as well. Zvicha is another word for tvicha. Could even be maybe the correct girsa is supposed to be tvicha. Anyway, whatever. So, according to the Chachamim, you'd be chayav even for shechting the animal. Why is the Braisa mentioning only selling it as though you're only chayav for that? So doesn't that show that the Braisa is like Reb Shimon? So the Gemara answers back. The Elamai could have Shimon. So what are you going to tell me? Yes, the Braisa is like Reb Shimon. You have to ask. Kilayim tvicha isa b'mechira lasa. So you can ask the other way around. Why is it mentioning only when he shechts the kilayim? Wouldn't the din of selling apply equally well? Once we say, as we're going to work out in the next piece, that the din of utvacha imachore applies not only to 100% seh, but even to one that has a mixture of goat in it. By the way, at the beginning of the parak, we talked about, I think the Maharshal says that b'chlal, the din of Abba v'chamisha would apply equally well to goats as to sheep, because even though sheep and goats are two different species, very often the Torah puts them under the umbrella term tsoin, and therefore it would be included. So here we're saying, though, the point is that nevertheless. So we're saying, even though it's a mixture of sheep and goat, he'd still be chayev. Anyway, the point is, why is the Braisa mentioning only shechting it? And what if he stole such an animal and sold it, he wouldn't be chayev? Ella, Tana tvicha v'hu adin l'mechira. The answer is very simple. The Tana mentioned shechting it, and we're meant to understand, obviously, the same thing applies to selling it. So emel rabbanon nami, therefore it's easy enough to say that the Braisa is according to the Chachamim, Tana mechira v'hu adin l'tvicha. The Braisa mentions selling the terefa, but in fact it would mean that he's chayev equally well for shechting. We don't mean, in other words, the Braisa is not according to Reb Shimon, and you're going to say he's chayev only for shechting and only for selling and not for shechting because the shechting is shchita shein ruya. No, we're not going to say that. We're going to say the Braisa just means it doesn't matter a terefa whether you shecht it or whether you sell it, and whether you sell it or whether you shecht it, and the chiddush in the case of shechting it is it's a shchita shein ruya, and Reb Shimon would have said that he's potter. Nevertheless, the Chachamim disagree with that and say he's chayev. So that would be the point of the Braisa. It's not trying to highlight the difference between Tvicha and Mechira. It mentions Mechira. It's meant to include Tvicha as well.
So they go according
to the Rabbanon. And therefore, so Reish Lakish said, that's not a proof against me where I'm saying that Reb Shimon would pater him for the Mechira. This Braisa would be according to the Chachamim.
And there's still a Chiddush.
So the Chiddush would be, in the case of Kilayim, we're going to work out in the next piece what the Chiddush is. In the case of the Trefa, the Chiddush is precisely that shechting it makes him chayev, even though Reb Shimon would have said he's potter. That according to the Chachamim, though, he is chayev.
They don't care.
Yeah. So for Rabbi Yechanan, Amalach, Rabbi Yechanan will answer you back. Hi, Mai. He says, what kind of an argument is that? Iyamet b'shlemer Reb Shimon. If you say that the Braisa is going specifically according to Reb Shimon, then you can say, you can understand why by Kilayim the Braisa mentioned only shechting it, and by the Terefa it mentioned only selling it. You could say, Ivy the Tona Terefa Behedya, because by the Terefa it had to mention only one. We have to consider, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, if this Braisa is according to Reb Shimon, then there are four possible cases, of which only three of them Reb Shimon would say that he's chayev. If it's a kilayim, whether he shechted or whether he sold it. If it's a terefa, only if he sold it, not if he shechted it. So therefore, because if it's a terefa and he shechted it, Reb Shimon papers him because it's shchitza shein ruya. So iyamet b'shlemer Reb Shimon. If you say the Braisa is according to Reb Shimon, then we understand why it mentions only shechting in connection with kilayim. I need the Tana Treifa B'choda once it has to, because since by Treifa it can only mention one possible case, because by Treifa you can't speak of Shchita, because Shchita of a Treifa will be Potter according to the Pshimen. So therefore, Tana Kilayim B'choda. So therefore, also the Tana chose to mention one possible case by Kilayim. So, right, to keep it parallel. Eli Amit Rabbanan, but if you say the Brai says point to the Chachamim, and they say all four cases are possible, well, then Ne'avinu v'nisninu. Then why doesn't the Brai just combine it all together? The Brai should just say Gun of Kilayim Atzreifa or Tvachon Mecharon v'Sham Tashlama Abba v'Chamisha, and it'll cover all four cases. So therefore, so doesn't that show that the Brai has to be according to the Chachamim? And the Gemara answer is Kasha. You're right, that Brai says Kasha and Rish Lakish. It's not a Tiyuvta, because he can still infer the wording of it, but it is a Kasha, why the Brai would do it that way rather than spelling out separately Tvicha by one and Mechira by the other. Okay. Now, let's get into this matter of Kilayim. The Gemara says, Kilayim, what do you mean that he should be Chayev for shechting or selling a Kilayim animal? Sexiv, doesn't the pasuk say seh and the Omar Rava? And in fact, Rava points out ze bona av. We have a binyan av from we have a bit like this. You have the Torah mentions when it lists the kosher animals in Parashas A, it says that you can eat the following animals: shur, seich sovim, v'sei izim. You can eat a shur, an ox, or any members of that family. Seich sovim, a sheep, v'sei izim, or goat. So since the pasuk specifies sei by both of them, it could have just said seich sovim v'izim. Instead, the Torah is implying that it's considered a seh sovim only if both its parents were sheep. It's considered a seh izim only if both its parents were goats.
What's the Torah mean? Seh means
it's kind of like a general term that covers both sheep and goats. It means an animal. I guess you could say it means an animal from the flock. I don't know. But anyway, the point is that ksavim means sheep, izim means goats. But by saying say ksavim, but say izim, rather than just saying ksavim the izim or say ksavim the izim, it teaches us that in order to be considered a seh, so therefore any place else in the Torah where it uses the word seh without the word kvasim or without the word izim, it means davka, one that's 100% keves or 100% ais, as the case may be. So here, and then connection with Hashlema Kef from the Hashlema Bav Chamisha, the expression is ki yigunav ish shor oy seh. So therefore, it should be only when it's 100% set, not when it's a mix of kvasim and izim. So Rava says ze bona av. We have a binyan av from the fact kol makom shenemar set, that wherever it says set, ene elo lahotzi esekilayim, that it means that it means. Specifically to include kilayim. So that being the case, here it says shor oiseh. So therefore, he should be potter. He should be potter for kilayim. Tosfos discusses over here. So Rashi doesn't bring it over here, but Rashi and Cholin explains that the binyan av comes from what we said about the pasuk shor seik sovim v'seizim. Tosfos actually disagrees with that and says that no, we learn from the pasuk about the Korban Pesach, this week's parasha, where it says se somim zochav and shana yilachem, and the fact is you can't bring a kilayim animal as a korban. So therefore, you can't. A kalayim is one of the types that's possible you can. Again, by the Korban Pesach, you can bring a sheep or you can bring a goat. You have your choice, but it has to be 100% sheep or 100% goat. So therefore, Tosfos learns that Rava is learning his binyan av from there. Since the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says something, min hakvasim umin ha'izim tikachu. Now, since by definition, seh means both kvasim and izim, the Torah could have just said seh samim yelachem without adding mina kvasim and izim, and we would have understood that it means one or the other, and it could even be a mix of both. By saying mina kvasim or mina izim, it means either a sheep or a goat. Completely, right. So according to Tosfos, that's where Rava is getting his binyan av from. And then the Rashba brings another possibility from the Raiva, that there's another, when it said twice, it says in the Pasuk Seh, it says, V'yikolahem ish sel aves aves sel aboyis, so therefore we can darshan from one of them, that it means it has to be 100% Seh. That has to be 100% of one species. Whatever the case, the point is, So Rava is learning a binyan av, so therefore, so it should apply in our case as well. By Tashlumei Abav Chamisha, he should be potter for Kalayim. And the answer is, Shiny Hochad Omakra Oi Lurabas is a Kalayim. The answer is because here it says Oi. It says, the word oi means or, so therefore it means that that comes to include kalaim as well. So you want to ask what do you mean? V'chol oi l'rabasu. So you're telling me when it says oi, it's coming to include something like that? V'atanya, we learn in a braisa. Fakert, when it says shur oi chesev, when the pasuk says about the animals that you can bring as a korban, and that you have to leave them for 8 days by their mother before you take them and shech them, so it says shur oi chesev, an ox or a sheep. That means the oi means prat the kilayim. It comes to exclude a kilayim animal, which we possible for a korban. And when it continues oi eis or a goat prat the nidme, that comes to exclude nidme. A nidme would be a freak animal that it's not a crossbreed, but it has some of the physical characteristics of the other one. So say for example you have a. So you have an animal that is, it was born from a ram and a ewe, from normal sheep parents, but it has some of the characteristics, it has mutations or something, and it has some of the characteristics of a goat or of some other species. That kind is also possible as a carbon. So therefore, you see that the word oi is being mamayit, not being marvin. So the answer is Omar Rava. In each case, you have to look at the word. It's not the word oi in and of itself is marbe or mamai. You have to look at the context. Because by gneva, the Torah only mentions a shur or a se. Now, a shur and a se are too far apart biologically to crossbreed and produce offspring b'chlal. So she'iyat yochalah it's kilayim b'nehem. You can't anyway. It's impossible to have a kilayim of a shur and a set. Therefore, oy l'rab is kilayim. Therefore, just the opposite. The word oy comes to include kilayim, which you otherwise wouldn't have had. And therefore, to tell us that you are chayev for tashlama abav chamisha, you're chayev for kilayim.
So
in other words, the Torah is telling us shur oy set. What is the word oi coming to tell us? Is it coming to tell us not kilayim? Anyway, a shur and se can't produce kilayim. So it's almost like ein miut acha miut el rabbis, but it's not really necessarily. But the point is, in other words, so fakir, the word oi is coming to include something else that's not mentioned in the pasuk, namely kilayim. So in fact, Tosfos points out because it says over here sure as well is why if it only said se, then yeah, we would say that then we would say the rule applies that it means not kalayim. But here where it says sure as well, then yeah. On the other hand, gabi kodshim, dechtiv kesev va'ez, when it comes to kodshim, it mentions a sheep or a goat right back to back with one another. By the way, Rashi points out the reason why you wouldn't be able to crossbreed an ox and a sheep. Rashi points out they even have different lengths of pregnancies. They're so far apart biologically, they have different lengths of pregnancies. Sheep and goats are small animals. Their pregnancies last 5 months. Cattle, oxen and oxen and cows, their pregnancies are like human beings. They last for 9 months. So it would be impossible to crossbreed them. On the other hand, Gabi Kodshim, Dichtiv Kesev Va'ez, on the other hand, by Kodshim, where it mentions back-to-back sheep and goats, Shati Yochel Lohotzi Kilayim B'neim, and conceivably you could produce Kilayim from a sheep and a goat, then Oy Lamayitu, therefore the word Oy is coming to exclude and saying that you can't bring Kilayim as a curtain. So the Gemara asks, well, Gabi Kodshim, Nami Nema Shur Oy Kesev, She'inati Yochel Lohotzi Kilayim B'neim. So the question is, after all, by the pasuk it says shur oi kesev oi eiz. So we're saying from shur oi kesev, we're learning that you can't bring kilayim. But anyway, shur and kesev are not going to produce kilayim. So just the opposite, we should be including kilayim. So fakert unerabi, we should be including kilayim the same way as we're including it by the case of gneva. And then Tosfos says that the point is yes, on the one hand we have keves and we have kesev and a's together, and that would be a reason to be mimayit. But on the other hand, what we would say is we have a concept called kula v'chumra l'chumra makshinan. When we have a possible hekdesh that will result in a chumra and another one that will result in a kula, we're going to go l'chumra. So therefore, so we would say over here that maybe it includes that kelayim can be brought as a korban as well. And I, we have the A's afterwards, we wouldn't be mamayit from that. The answer is midisayfa lamayit, reisha nami lamayit. Fine, but since by the kesev A's, we're coming to exclude something from the word oy, we're saying that we're excluding a nidme, we're excluding this animal, this freak animal, then therefore, reisha nami lamayit, then we should assume that in the reisha also, we're coming to exclude something, namely the kelayim. Well, we want to ask the other way around. Ad rabba midreisha l'rabba seif and nami l'rabbas. You could argue the other way around. Okay, since, you're skipping a line. Mid seif l'mayit reisha nami l'mayit. Since in the seifa we're coming to exclude something, namely a nidme, then therefore in the beginning of the pasuk we also should assume that we're coming to exclude something, namely the kelai. Well, the Gemara asks, "Adrabba, midreisha l'rabba, seifa nami l'rabbas." Can't you argue the other way around and say that in the beginning of the pasuk you're adding kelayim, and in the end of the pasuk you're adding that you can bring a nidma as a korban? So maybe both parts, maybe both oys are meant to add something. You could bring a shor or kesev or eis. In addition, you can also bring a kelayim and you can also bring a nidma. The Gemara answers back, "Hi mai, what kind of an argument would that be?" Iyam b'shleima. If you're going to say that both of them, the oy is coming to exclude something, then we understand why you need two miyotim. Why do you need twice oy? Even though we've already excluded kilayim, with the first oy, nevertheless, you still have to exclude the nidme, because after all, you could argue the nidme is 100% sheep. It just looks like another animal. So maybe that shouldn't be enough to pass along as a korban. So there would be a bigger chiddush. So therefore, the Torah has to first mention that kilayim are excluded, and then in addition, not only are kilayim excluded, but even a nidme is excluded.
So we need it, therefore.
But if you're going to tell me the oy is coming to include kelayim trei riboy yaloma, then why would you need a second riboy? Hash to kelayim irvilei. If you're even adding that kelayim, you can bring, even though kelayim are biologically half sheep and half goat. Nidme miboya. Would there be a chiddush by nidme that you could bring it? Obviously not. You could learn a kavachomer that you could learn a kavachomer that you would be able to bring a nidme, because madach, an animal that's not 100% one type, wow, and you're able to bring it. How much more so an animal that is 100% one type and it just looks a little different. So given that you'd have that kavachomer, you wouldn't need to say twice oi, and therefore if it does say twice oi, yeah, then it can only be that both of them are lamayit, and so definitely the second one is to be lamayit. So the second one is to be lamayit, and once it is, then we say within the same pasuk both of them are to be mamayit. The second one to be mamayit nidma, and the first one to be mamayit kilayim. And the point is, once we're mamayit kilayim, then we need a chidush, then it's a chidush to say that also we're mamayit, nidma.
The Gemara can ask, like, why would it tell you to learn one, we'll learn the other way?
Because... Right, so that's why, because we figured out logically that there, if we were marba kilayim, automatically we would be marba nidma, and there'd be no reason for that. Therefore, it must be that we're mamayit then. Tosfos does point out that on the other hand, fakir, we could have said that it says only that we're mamayit only nidma, and then automatically kelayim go with it, because we would say if we're saying you can't even bring a nidma, how much more so you can't bring kelayim. The fact is, we wouldn't have known if we only had one oy. We would have said that even though it's between shur, even though it's between kesev and a's, and conceivably kesev and a's could produce kelayim, but since we have shur in the pasuk as well, we would have said if there was only one oy, we would have used it for kelayim. We wouldn't have known to use it for nidme. Therefore, we need two oys, where the first one is for kelayim, and then that leaves the second one for nidme.
Either way, we all agree a nidme would be more logical.
No, that's the fakir. We would think kelayim is more reason to passel, because kelayim at least. So therefore, if we only had one oy, then we would have used it for kelayim, and we wouldn't have known bechlal that nidme is passel. So therefore, we end up needing two oys, because otherwise we wouldn't have known both of them. Tosfos also discusses the point that on the face of it, what do you need a kal v'chomer? If you don't have anything to exclude, if you don't have anything to exclude a nidma, then we have no reason to say it's possible. Why would the pasuk need to include it? What are we saying? That we say that conceivably the pasuk might have been telling us you could bring kelayim and you could bring nidma, but why would you even need that? You wouldn't have a reason to say that you can't bring nidma unless we had a suspicion that you can't. So then the Torah could have said nothing at all, and we would have understood that we would have figured that a nidma is kosher. So what are we saying now? That if we're saying that if you were marba kelayim, how much more so a nidma would be good? You wouldn't need that kal v'chomer anyway, without an explicit miut that a nidma is possible. So Tosfos answers because really there's two different kinds of nidma. Sometimes you have where at least the posit, you can have a nidma where the animal basically looks like a sheep, but it has some simonym of another animal. Then you can have a nidma where it's completely a freak and it doesn't look like either one of its parents. You can have, let's say, a nidma. You can have an animal that, again, was born from a regular ram and ewe, a regular sheep parents, but it looks completely like a horse or like some other animal or whatever. So it happens. So that kind of thing, without that pasuk, you would say that only the first kind of nidma would be kosher, but the other one you would say is posel. So we do after all say that if kelayim had been kosher, then either kind of nidma would be kosher as well. Instead, now we have the two oys to tell us one that kelayim is posel and the other one that nidma is posel. So
we might mix up a nidma with two different nidmas.
So there, because there's two, that's the point. Charles was saying within nidma itself there were two different categories, right? So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Best Hashem, about this Binyan Av of Rabbas and what we learn from it and the different possibilities as far as Kilayim and Nidman, all of that.
Tomorrow I have to double 7:30 minyan. Is there any way we can